Last time, on Tales of the Ironlands, Kalaira Sophie's daughter found her way to the Skaren clan of the elves in the deep wilds. There, she was greeted by Ralith, the leader of the clan, and invited back to the village. Upon arrival, after having been shown to a room, the elder Kokari of the village, a man named Varys, showed up in order to seek her assistance with something. But before he could tell her what it was that he hoped Kalaira could help him with, Ralith put in another appearance. It seems that the previous leader of the Skaren clan, a man named Huron, had perished some 5 days previous, and for the past 3 nights, his hollow, a terrible spiritual being, had been haunting the village, howling down below. It could not get up into the trees to get at them. But the entire clan was in a state of turmoil over this. A hollow arises when an injustice has been done, specifically when it arises from the spirit of an elf who has been slain unjustly. Ralith was the new leader of the tribe, having inherited the position from her father, Huron, who's now haunting the village. She requested that Kalaira go with her to confront the Hollow that evening, hoping that Kalaira would strike the Hollow down and thereby put an end to its reign of terror. She gave Kalaira until the evening to consider this proposal and then left, whereupon Varys came out of hiding once again and reported that he believed that Huron had actually been murdered, perhaps even at Ralith's hand. He wanted Kalaira to investigate this possibility and determine whether or not Huron had been murdered, and if so, by whom. He left, leaving Kalaira to ponder this dilemma. It was a very difficult decision for her. She spent quite some time thinking about it. Based on Ralith's manner, she was more inclined to believe Varys was telling the truth. But what eventually decided her to assist Varys instead of Ralith was that if her investigations came up dry, she could still go with Ralith to confront the Hollow and thereby get what she needed. Kalaira is not one for investigation and sneaking around, and so she decided on a very straightforward plan. She would ask the Hollow whether he had been murdered, and if so, if he could name his murderer. In her attempts to get to Varys to inform him of this plan and ask him to come bear witness to it, she tipped off Ralith as to what she was going to do, or that she had had communication with Varys. And so when the moment of confrontation came, Ralith had backup waiting for her. A series of 3 archers who attempted to kill Kalaira for having interfered with Ralith's plan to destroy the Hollow and thus compound the injustice done in Huron's death. For indeed, it was Ralith who had murdered him by poison so that she could take control of the clan. Initially disarmed in that fight, Kalaira spent a good while just trying to locate her sword, but when eventually she got it back, she was able to tear through those archers, rapidly dispatching them, and then turn to deal with Ralith, who had been fighting the Hollow in the background. With a couple of well-placed blows and a moment's distraction, Ralith was defeated, torn in half by the spirit of her dead father for murdering him. Varys came forward and agreed to assist Kalyra by telling her about primordials, which was all she was really after in this entire endeavor, after matters have been settled in the village. That is where we're going to pick up. Varys and Kalyra make their way back along the path towards the village. Kalyra is wounded. Varys came through untouched, having spent much of the fight observing from the edges. Upon arriving back at the village of the Skaren, they discover that, as is usual in these times, the ladders have been pulled up. Varys calls out in his own language up above. Kalyra can see the dark shapes of elves moving, backlit by the glowing flowers that twine the trees of the village. And after a few moments, a rope ladder is lowered. Varys climbs up in front of her, and Kalyra follows. Reaching the top of the ladder, which brought them to the central tree, Kalyra pulls herself up over the edge and looks about to discover that there is a small crowd of elves here. No children, it's late, but they are all standing in a semicircle, clearly wanting to know what has happened. Varys is already speaking to them in their own language. I'm going to be conducting dialogue for Varys and the other elves in their language that Kalyra does not understand, but for the benefit of the viewers, listeners, and myself, I will narrate it in English. Varys, as Kalyra pulls herself up onto the platform behind him and stands, is saying, "The Hollow has seen justice done. It will trouble us no longer." "But what happened, Varys?" Says a man in the crowd. "Ralith went with our guest, the woman Kalyra, Sophie's daughter," and in the background, Kalyra, you know, notes the presence of her name in the dialogue. "Ralith went with Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, to confront him. I accompanied them, although Ralith did not know it. I was present, watching from the hidden in the trees. Ralith began by trying to order the Hollow to simply go away and leave us undisturbed, and there is a rustling amidst the crowd, who note a couple of things. First off, Ralith is not with them. And second, this is not a thing one generally says to a Hollow. It naturally did not agree. And at that point, our guest, Kalyra, spoke to it in her language and asked whether he had been murdered. Stock, still silence as everyone waits to hear. The Hollow indicated that it was. Our leader Huron was murdered. Continued silence. Before Ralith could say anything further, the woman Kalyra asked also whether the Hollow could name his murderer, and it pointed at Ralith. At that, there are great exclamations and a babble of many, many people trying to speak all at once, Varys holds up both hands and says, "Hush!" By the Hollow's own actions, Rahleth has been named a murderess, a murderer of her own father. When this was revealed, she ordered three men. I saw Jaska, Ilmari, and Axel there. They came out of the shadows of the forest, and she ordered them to shoot the woman Kalyra, while she turned and fought her father's Hollow. It was a difficult fight. Everyone is silent once again, noting that Jaska, Ilmari, and Axel are not there. They look at Kalyra, clearly wounded. I believe there is, in fact, still an arrow partially embedded in her shoulder. And she looks just beat up, scuffed, covered in dirt. "She is a very dangerous woman," Varys says. "Although she initially tripped and lost her sword, once she retrieved it, they did not stand much of a chance." And then she turned on Rahleth, who was, in the end, killed by the Hollow. After which it dispersed. Huron's murder has been avenged, and he will trouble us no longer. I am going to ask the Oracle what kind of reaction the elves have to all of this news. Probably rolling on the theme table. Here we go. I got 64 structure. I think what happens is one of the men of this small group steps forward and says, "And who shall lead the tribe now?" I also want to know, are there any obvious successors to Rahleth here? I've decided that the elves have castes already, the Kokari being the shaman or priest class. I think there's also a caste for leaders, which I think I will call the Elendi. So I'm going to ask the Oracle, how many successors or potential successors are available now? Is it 0, 1, 2, or 3? And in order to decide that, I'm going to roll a d6 and subtract. If I roll a 5 or a... how am I going to do this? I want a number 0 to 3. So I'll roll 1 through 4. If I come up 5 or 6, I'll re-roll it. And then I'll subtract 1 from whatever number I get that isn't a 5 or 6. Okay. Came up 6, re-rolling. Came up 5, re-rolling. All right. I got a 3 minus 1 is 2. There are 2 potential successors here in the village. We will have to resolve that in the morning. "And what of my husband?" says a woman from the crowd. "I'm sorry, Awani," says Varys. She turns her mask away. "What's going on?" Kalyra says. All of the elves turn to look at her, which is kind of intimidating, all of them staring at her out of the holes of their masks. She starts to take a step backward and then remembers that there's a 60-foot drop into the darkness behind her and instead just twitches a little bit. There are many things to be decided, says Varys in her tongue. For the moment, please, we will take you to your room. You may heal yourself and rest. In the morning, we will have to hold a council to decide what it is to be done. And he says as much to the others in their own tongue. Varys shows her the way. She is a little creeped out by these bridges in the dark still, but with a guide showing her the way, and having had a little more experience with them now, she gets across them without too much difficulty. In her room, Kalyra puts her things against the wall, sits down, and for a moment just rests with her arms on her knees. She is battered, bloodied, and not at all certain of her welcome in the village, now that she has slain three of them by her own hand, and caused the leader of the village to die at the hands of a hollow. Regardless, she wearily pulls out her herbal supplies and sets about tending her wounds. Currently she's at +1 health. I have +2 supply, so I'm going to choose to take an additional health on a hit. Rolling at +2. And she has a 4 versus a 2 and a 7. So that is a weak hit. She gets... her supplies are going to decrease by 1 as she expends some of her herbal resources healing herself. However, she does get +3 health. 1, 2, 3. It's difficult extracting the arrow by herself. Maybe I should have asked them for help, she says, but she's a little uncertain of her welcome here, as mentioned, and so she opted not to. With her wounds bandaged, she stiffly rolls out the bedroll and goes to bed. I'm not going to make a camp roll here. She is not in a camp. In the morning, Kalyra sleeps late. She was exhausted by the fight last night, and by the days of swift travel before that. It's been a long time since she had an opportunity to sleep on a bed. Even a strange bedroll like this one seems to be stuffed with some sort of soft material that she doesn't recognize immediately. The sun is well up by the time Kalyra finally comes to consciousness, and her stomach growls. She eats a little breakfast, just, I think, just some jerky. She's running very low on supplies, and it's probably the last of the jerky. She's going to need to resupply here very soon. Sick at heart and a little paranoid about her current welcome, she decides to take all of her gear with her today. She packs everything up, makes sure that she's restored the room to its ready state, that is, with the bed rolled up, and climbs down the rope ladder, She can hear already that there are people, there are loud voices emerging from the central tree. She makes her way over to it. As she approaches the central tree, Kalyra can hear a babble of raised voices. There are two guards standing outside the entryway to the central room in the center of this enormous tree. She approaches. They nod at her, but one points at her sword and gestures that she must take it off. And although this worries her a great deal, she does so, unbuckling her belt and wrapping it about the sheath and leaning it against the wall just outside the entrance. The two guards nod at her, and she passes in. Within, she timidly looks forward and discovers that there is an entire group of elves in there. Varys is there, and of course many others that she doesn't recognize, not having met a lot of people here. Upon her arrival, they are all trying to speak at once. Varys is sitting at the front of the room, slightly to one side. There is an empty seat, which Kalyra thinks must be that belongs to the leader of the tribe. He is not sitting in that seat, but is instead sitting to one side of it. And he has both hands up and is trying to get control of the meeting. As she steps in, everyone turns to look at her silently. It's all the masks looking at her. There's a moment of silence. And then one of them, a woman, runs towards Kalyra, shouting, "Tapoit mia heni! Tapoit mia heni!" The others grab her and pull her back as Kalyra sort of backs away. "My apologies," Varys said. "She is overcome." "I don't understand," Kalyra says. "That her husband was one of the archers last night," Varys says. "Oh," says Kalyra. "What was she saying?" "She said, 'You killed my husband. You killed my husband.'" Kalyra looks at the woman, the masked face. Even through the mask, Kalyra can tell that this woman is distraught. She notes there appear to be tears dripping off the bottom of the mask. They must have slid down the interior. Kalyra walks forward and kneels before her and says, "I'm very sorry, but I was not willing to die for Roloth's sake." And she glances to Varys, who translates the speech. And I am going to make a compel roll here, rolling plus heart, in order to see whether Kalyra is successful in talking this distraught woman down. She is not. I have a total of 6. 3 plus 3 is 6, versus a 6 and an 8. That is a miss. She must pay the price. I think the obvious price is that this woman, Aoni, is going to strike her. Aoni rips one arm free of the others who are restraining her and just slaps Kalyra hard across the face. Kalyra sees stars, is going to take one health damage. That's a really strong hit, and is going to endure harm. She has a 4 versus a 9 and a 2. That's a weak hit. She presses on. Kalyra turns her face back towards the woman who is breathing heavily, shoulders rising and falling with each breath. And Kalyra simply nods, one side of her face reddening. The woman storms out of the hall. The others are silent. Kalyra stands and turns to face Varys. She says, "I wish to set things right for the Skaren. Those men lie dead at my hand, and I am sorry for that, but I will defend myself when I am attacked, and I think it is reasonable of me to do so. How can I make this up? Or, rather, how can I make amends, for I cannot give you back your dead men?" Varys translates this for the others of the group, then says, "There is nothing that can be done on that until a new leader has been chosen. We were just discussing that when you came in. There are two claimants, Einari, and a man over to the side tips his mask to one side as he hears his name, and Kala." And a woman on the other side of the room nods. It is customary, when there is an unclear or disputed succession, and in this case it is unclear simply because Rolith was her father's only child, and left no issue of her own. These two are both first cousins of hers. Each has an equal claim. They will have to prove themselves or undergo some sort of ritual. I'm going to ask the Oracle, what kind of ritual do the elves use to settle succession disputes? So I think that's going to be both action and theme tables. And rolling my oracle dice on the action table, I got 32, breach, and the theme came up 33. Breach, peace. Huh. Well, that suggests single combat. Because it is a breach of the peace of the tribe. These two will have to fight it out until either one of them is dead, or else one concedes to the other. Oh, what is... how is that done? It will be a fight between the two of them. Down below, where there's plenty of room for them to maneuver and everyone may see the fight. Varys says, It will be up to the successor to decide what is to be done about the men who perished last night. Is there anything I can do? Kalyra says. No, says Varys. This is an internal matter. All right. You should go now, Varys says. The fight will happen at noon. You may come and observe if you wish. And that is what she does. Kalyra makes her way away. She wants to stay out of sight. She is a point of contention at the moment. So she simply goes back to the room they assigned her, and what does she do with her time? This has to be eating away at her. Time is precious. She doesn't know when her father, or how long she has to rescue her father. She paces in the tiny room like a caged animal until an elf comes. It is a young woman. Very young. She looks to be... Well, it's hard to judge the age of these people, partly because of the masks, but also because they age differently than people she has known before. It looks to be a young woman, perhaps in her teen years, or the equivalent of. Her mask is very new. There are no nicks or scratches on it. It still has the sheen of the oils that were rubbed into it. She says in a lightly accented voice, "I am Belisant. Varys sent me to get you. It is time for the fight." "Oh, good. I've been going crazy in here, waiting to see what happens." "It is a very unsettled time." "I'm so glad you speak my language," says Clara. "I've had no one to talk to." "I still have something of an accent, I am told. But I do speak your language. Come," Belisant says. She leads Kalyra down out of the room, out of the upper village, and down the rope ladders. A crowd of elves has formed around a large open space in the center. There, the two combatants, Ainari and Kala, have put on armor and taken weapons. It looks as though both of them have chosen spears for this. Varys is officiating. He steps forth and raises up both hands. The sleeves of the robe that he is wearing fall back slightly from his arms as he raises them. And he speaks in his own language. Belisant translates for Kalyra and says, "He is saying that in accordance with the rituals of our ancestors, these two must fight to prove who is the stronger and the more worthy to lead the tribe." This is not a fight that is meant to go to the death. So soon as one... what is the word? And she falls behind slightly on the translation as she searches for the word... one of them may yield to the other, and then that will decide the fight. And in accordance with the rituals, the loser must leave the tribe.
"Really?" says Kalyra.
"Yes. We have found that it is unwise to have an unsuccessful leadership candidate stay in the tribe. Whoever loses here will be leaving. Perhaps they will go to a different tribe. It's not so bad." And Kalyra looks over at Belisant at this last and says, "Have you left your tribe?"
"Yes, of course. I am Kokari," says Belisant. "It is the way."
"What do you mean?" "All Kokari leave their tribe. We are born into a tribe, but once it has come time to apprentice, we must leave and seek a teacher in a different tribe. So I am not originally of the Skaren. They're my tribe now, but
Previously, I was from a different tribe, the Kaisu.
Oh. At this time, Kalira's attention is called back to the center because Varys has stopped speaking and stepped back. The two combatants circle one another. Ainari is a young man, seemingly. His mask is made of a dark brown material, and he is fast, slender, clearly quick on his feet. The woman, Kala, is somewhat shorter than he is. Her mask is made of a some sort of almost white wood, birch perhaps, but she seems much tougher but a little slower. And I think we are simply going to ask the Oracle which of these two wins the fight. I'm just going to assign a 50-50 chance here. If I roll 51 or higher, it will be Kala. If I roll lower, it will be Ainari. So, who wins the fight? The Oracle has said 72. The battle is quick. Ainari leaps forward, attempting to use his speed to gain the upper hand quickly. But although she is slower, and Kala manages to swipe his spear out of the way and turn his own momentum against him, she spins and slaps his back as he comes forward. He stumbles, and she raises her spear and points it down and slams it towards him, but he rolls out of the way. Her spear is stuck in the ground. His has dropped away. He gets to his feet and attempts to kick her. She is forced to let go of the spear and back away. The two circle one another, each looking for an opening. Ainari attempts again to use his speed to advantage. He moves forward and attempts to sweep her legs out from under her, but she sees it coming and leaps up over his foot. And as he is off balance, she lands, plants both feet firmly on the ground, and shoves him backwards. He staggers away, manages to keep his feet, but while he is recovering from that, she leaps backwards, landing right next to the spear that he dropped earlier. She snatches it up and whips it around, bringing the point directly at his throat. She says something in their tongue, and he nods. She lifts the spear.
He has yielded. Kala is our new leader, says Sir Belisant, and Ainari must go.
It seems strange to me, Kalira says, but I suppose if it's your way, then that is how we must do it.
Why is it so strange? Belisant says. Surely we wish to have a powerful war leader in charge of the tribe.
Do you spend that much time fighting? Kalira says.
No, says Belisant. That is why we need a powerful war leader.
What? Kalira says.
If we had a weak leader, we would be a target, I think is the word. We must have a strong leadership that will make others think twice before attacking.
Huh. I suppose I hadn't thought of it that way, Kalyrus says.
It has worked out for us. There are fights between tribes, but they are less common than you might think. Often we are able to resolve disputes with other clans without fighting, but we prefer not to invite attacks by appearing weak.
Very well. That's how you do it.
The crowd around is not exactly cheering. This is a serious occasion, and no one is happy. Least of all, the people who lost. It's still a time of unsettled relationships. Anyone who had favor with Raleth or with Huron before her, all of that has evaporated. Their support, in whatever internal politics there are within the tribe, has gone. Anyone who had good relationships with Kala from before stands to rise. And those who favored Ainari, perhaps their stock has fallen.
I think at this point, I'm contemplating marking progress on the vow to set things right for the Skaren, but that doesn't really feel quite appropriate. So far, Kalyra hasn't really done anything here, except offer to make amends for the men she's killed. I think it'll have to wait a little bit longer.
The woman, Kala, steps forward and addresses the crowd in their own tongue, and Belisant translates once more.
She is saying that the first matter of business must be to see to our debt.
Oh, we just left them there last night. I should have thought of that, Kalyra says.
Belisant's mask shakes a no.
Do not worry, Varys did not forget. We retrieved the bodies immediately. We sent them a party in the darkness to collect them. They have all been brought for preparation.
And then the woman Kala turns towards them and says in Kalyra's language, Kalyra Sophie's daughter, we will need to speak with you above. Be in the council chamber in the next 5 minutes.
She speaks my language?
Of course. Yes, says Kalyra, and then aside to Belisant,
she speaks my language? Of course. Ever since your people came to the Ironlands, it has been a requirement, or not a requirement exactly, but we make sure that every member of the LND and the Kokari castes learn your language. Most of the rest of the clans do not, or the castes, I should say. But our leaders and our shamans learn to speak your tongue. That is why I know it. I have been learning it from Varys.
And how did they learn it? I presume by going amongst your people and talking to them.
Oh, well, I suppose that makes sense, Kalyra says.
In any case, Kalyra goes back, leaving her sword outside the council chamber once more, and goes there. Belisant accompanies her, and Varys is there as well. She does not see Ainari. Presumably, he is elsewhere in the village, perhaps traveling, or preparing to travel, packing.
The room is filled. Varys sits in the same place that he did before, to one side of the leadership chair, which is now occupied by Calla. Kalyra enters, and uncertain of the protocol, simply bows to Calla. "Kalyra, Sophie's daughter," says Calla. "You have caused quite a ruckus in the short time you have been amongst us. It seems that three of our warriors fell at your hand."
"That is true," says Kalyra. "They attacked me at the order of Rahleth." "And why did Rahleth order you killed?"
"I refused to assist her in putting down her father's hollow unjustly."
"Yes," says Calla. "Varys has explained that to us. Nevertheless, there are three dead men and two grieving widows with their children. Some amends must be made. I am prepared to..." "Among my people," Kalyra says, "we pay blood price in such instances. We offer coins or other goods. It is not a way of... It is not always satisfactory. Some people demand vengeance anyway, but the system is designed to prevent an ever-escalating feud between families, and to ensure that the bereaved are not left entirely without support." "And do you have any money?" Calla says. And Kalyra shakes her head.
"Not much. I mean, a few coppers. I did not expect to need it when I left."
"Well then, you cannot offer money according to your custom, and therefore you must work with ours."
So now I'm going to ask the Oracle, how do the elves settle a blood debt? This sounds like an action and theme roll, so here's action. Came up with a 63 challenge on action. And a 33 piece. Challenge piece. Well, I mean, that sounds like more single combat. How would that work? Challenge piece. I'm not coming up with any good obvious ideas there. I'm going to keep the challenge from action, but I'm going to roll on theme again and see if there if there's a better answer. I got a 98. Challenge home. I think I'm going to pause the recording and think about that for a while.
"Our custom," Calla says. "You have seen what happens when an elf is slain unjustly. It returns as a hollow, seeking the vengeance that will set its spirit at rest. Therefore, our custom, when an elf has been slain, is that the killer must visit the home that the victim lived in. There, they must ritually wash the body, kneel before it, declare their intentions, or that they killed them honorably, and seek the spirit's blessing. If this is done satisfactorily, then
no hollow arises, and the elf may be laid to rest. Kalyra wears a necklace about her neck, I think. It's nothing terribly much. It's just a small bauble. It's a small iron charm in the shape of a spiral, which her mother gave to her. She reaches up and grabs it. She says, "I swear by this iron that my mother gave me, I shall go to the homes of each of the three men I killed, wash their bodies, declare my honorable intent in killing them, and seek their forgiveness, according to your custom." And she's going to swear an iron vow. Heart. All right, she has a 7, 4 plus 3, versus a 6 and a 9. So that's a weak hit. Her momentum increases to 3. Kala nods. "Very good. This is an honorable course of action. May I ask for someone to accompany me to translate?" Kalyra says. "Of course," says Kala. "Varys, I shall leave it to you, whether it is you or your apprentice who accompanies her." Varys nods and says, "I think I will send Belisande. She needs practice at the language anyway." This is going to be a troublesome quest. Not a very difficult one, I think. Kalyra nods and says, "Should I do this immediately?" "Yes," says Kala. "At once. The longer this goes undone, the greater the chances that another hollow shall arise. And we have had enough of those lately. Besides which, if a hollow arises from a man that you killed, it is clearly your responsibility to deal with it, and I suspect you probably don't want to face one." "You are correct," says Kalyra. "I have seen what they can do. They are dangerous creatures." "Then you must go." Kalyra nods. Leaving the council chamber, Belisande falls in at her side says, "I suspected it might go this way. We'll be visiting the homes. Do you have any particular order you wish to do them in?" "No, why would I?" Kalyra says. "I didn't know any of them. I mean, I arrived here yesterday, and by the end of the day I'd killed them." "Then I will take you first to the house of Alina." Belisande leads Kalyra along the bridges that connect this village until they come to a house. It's on sort of the northern outskirts of the village, and as they approach, Kalyra notices that the plants, the glowing flowers that grow over it, have been stripped of their blossoms. "Why are the blossoms gone, the ones that give off light?" Kalyra says. "It is a sign of mourning," Belisande says. "When a member of the house dies, the light goes with them." "Oh, that's depressing," Kalyra says. "Come." Belisande takes Kalyra in. It seems that the elves spend much of their time outdoors. These buildings are necessarily small because they have been constructed in trees. Just a single room. She can see three bedrolls there, and there is an elven woman
who is kneeling next to one of the bedrolls that has been unrolled, and on it lies the body of one of the men that Kalyra slew last night. He still wears his mask. His wounds have been cleaned and bound, and he has been dressed in a simple white shift that covers most of him. His feet are bare, and his hands have been clasped across his belly. The elven woman looks up as they come in. Kalyra can see her eyes through her mask. They are red from crying. And in the corner of the room, she notices the little girl that she saw yesterday, the one who felt her face. Belisant says something in their language, and the woman, Alina, nods. There is water here. You must wash his hands and his feet. If you were one of ours, we would have you wash his face as well, but as you are an outsider, I will ask before we do this. And she turns to Alina and says something in their tongue. The woman shakes her mask vigorously and speaks a few sharp words. Belisant nods and says, "You are not to remove his mask under any circumstances." I see. I understand, says Kalyra. There is a bowl of water there, and Kalyra picks it up, setting aside the rest of her gear. She washes the man's hands and his feet. And then she sets the bowl aside and dries them with a soft cloth which has been provided. She kneels down beside him, opposite from his grieving widow. She says, "My name is Kalyra, Sophie's daughter. I fear to pay my father's debt. Yesterday, I slew this man in honorable combat. He had his weapon. I had mine. I take no joy in his death. I am sorry for the loss of his loved ones. And I ask his spirit's forgiveness." Belisant translates all of this for Alina and the little girl. The little girl bursts out crying partway through the translation and runs out of the room. The mother starts to go after her, but Belisant says, no, in her language, and runs after the little girl to comfort her. Alina and Kalyra sit facing one another, one face behind a mask, the other unmasked. And I'm going to make a move here to and see whether it is... whether her apology, if that is the word, her request for forgiveness is granted by the spirit. Now, I am going to look over the list of moves here. I think I'm going to, it's a little unorthodox, I think I'm going to use Test Your Bond. She did not have a relationship with this man. But I think it makes sense. Yeah, we're going to test her bond, and I'm going to give her +1 on the roll. So this is heart +1, she's got a +4 on the roll, and here comes the roll. I've rolled a 1 on the action die for a total of 5. versus a 5 and a 1. That is a weak hit. Bellisant returns with the little girl in her hand, and just as she does, there is a stillness that spreads across the room. And then a voice speaks in a whispered tone. Although it is spoken in the language of the elves, Kalaira understands its meaning perfectly, and it says,
"I have heard your declaration. I demand that you show your mettle, shed your blood as you shed mine in proof of your earnestness."
It is deeply chilling, but Kalaira draws her sword. She runs it across the palm of her hand. Bright red blood wells up from the cut, and she squeezes it. Drops of blood fall from her hand into the bowl of water down below, where they disperse. Drip, drip, drip. And she is going to suffer 1 damage and endure harm. Weak hit. She presses on with a 4 versus 3 and 6.
It is enough.
And then, all of a sudden, they can hear the birds outside again. The moment has passed. Alina reaches out towards her daughter, with tears falling from the back side of her mask where they have dripped down on the inside, and pulls her daughter to her. "We should go now," Bellisant says, and leads Kalaira outside. I'm going to mark progress on the vow to make peace with her slain. That is 3 progress. "Whew," says Kalaira. "We should move on. Would you like to go to Awani's house, or go to see the house of the man who was unmarried?"
I should see Awani," Kalaira says. Let's go there."
Bellisant leads her back through the village. Awani and her husband Ilmari lived at the west side of the village. Upon arrival, as before, the flowers have been stripped of their blossoms. Entering, Kalaira discovers that Awani is there. They apparently did not have any children, or if they did, then they are not present. As before, Ilmari, his wounds have been bound, he's been dressed in a shift. He lies on his bedroll, bare feet, and his hands clasped over his belly. Bellisant begins to say something to Awani, who cuts her off, and Bellisant simply says, "I think we should do this quickly." Kalaira nods. She takes the bowl that has been prepared here as well, washes his hands,
and his feet, dries them, and once again sits opposite the widow of the man she slew. "My name is Calyra Sophie's daughter. I fear to pay my father's debt. Yesterday I met this man in combat and killed him. We both had our weapons. The loss went to him. I grieve for the loss of his loved ones, but I believe I have acted with honor, and I ask his spirit's forgiveness." Belisant translates this, and partway through the translation, Aoni reaches out and slugs her across the face again. Calyra takes it and doesn't react. After a moment, the stillness comes again, and we're going to roll test your bond again, once again at +4. All right, 3 + 4 = 7 versus a 1 and a 4. So that is a strong hit. She's going to get +1 spirit, which she really kind of needs because she's only at 1 here. +2 momentum, which is very nice. The stillness comes, and a voice speaks in that language which is not a language, language which sounds elven, but she understands its meaning. And it says,
"I bear no grudge. It was a fight well fought. Aoni, mourn me for 3 months, and then move on. You deserve a good life. Farewell."
And as the sound returns once again outside, Aoni begins weeping, sobbing openly, and Belisant simply puts a hand on Kalyra's shoulder and pulls her away, leaving the woman to her private grief. And I'm going to mark progress on making peace with her slain. That's up to 6. "I think that was most likely the hardest of them," says Belisant. "Come, I will take you to Axel's house." She leads Calyra through the village, not far away, actually. Axel also apparently lived on the west side of the village. They find not a grieving widow, but a pair, a husband and wife, a mother and a father, who have been bereft of their son. He lies, as the others did, in a white shift, on a bedroll, hands clasped. Calyra bows as she comes in, and the two do not acknowledge her, but simply wait. Now well familiar with what is to come, Calyra takes the bowl. She washes Axel's hands and feet and dries them, takes her seat opposite the grieving parents. "I am Calyra Sophie's daughter. I fear to pay my father's debt. Yesterday evening, I met this man Axel in combat. We both had our weapons. We both fought well. I meant him no ill, and I grieve for the loss of his loved ones. Now ask his blessing or forgiveness." Belisant translates this, There is no reaction from the two on the opposite side. And we're going to test bond once again. That's heart and another plus one as before, so plus four. 2 plus 4 is 6 versus a 5 and a 6. So that is a weak hit. The sound leaves once again. After a long moment, the strange, sibilant voice, in some ways it has sounded like the same voice each time, says,
"I bear you no ill will, Calyra, Sophie's daughter, and acknowledge a fight honorably fought, but in token of your respect, I demand that you be the one to set my pyre alight."
"This I shall do," Calyra says.
"It is enough."
And I'm going to mark progress once more. Calyra stands, bows once again to the grieving parents, who once again make no reaction. Calyra walks outside, straight past Belisant. She leans on the tree, the next tree over. She crosses a bridge and leans on a tree and just rests her forehead against it, shaking. "That was intense," Calyra says when she hears Belisant come up behind her. "It is not meant to be an easy task, but it is meant to show that all was done properly. When will the burning be?" Calyra says. "I will need to be there to start his pyre." "This evening," Belisant says. "All right. I still need to find out about my father. Can we see Varys?" "Very well. Come with me," says Belisant. Belisant leads her out of the trees of the village, down the rope ladders to the clearing below, and off a ways into the forest. There's a path leading to the north, up a slope. It's a good long ways, actually almost half an hour's walk, before they come to a small clearing, an opening in the trees. There they find a series of standing stones, 7 of them, arranged in a circle. Their surfaces have been carved with intricate whirling loops and designs. "Oh, I've seen one of these before." And Belisant turns her mask towards Calyra and says, "You have?" "Yes. It was the first day outside of my outside of Palinham when I was tracking the Earth Primordial. I came across one of these standing alone in the forest. It was old. I was interested. I stopped and almost touched it, but I had to go." " Interesting, says Belisande. In the center of the stone circle, Varys is seated, cross-legged, with his arms, with his hands resting loosely on his knees, and his mask raised up. Belisande stops just outside of the circle. Belisande raises her hands and claps twice. You may enter, Varys says. Belisande and Kalyra step forward. And has she done what she said she would? Says Varys. Belisande nods and says, she went and spoke with the spirits of all three of the men she slew. All three of them have indicated their forgiveness. That is good, said Varys. And I am going to mark progress on set things right for the Skaren. That brings me to a total of 6 progress on that one. And Kalyra says, can you tell me now what I need to know? Is everything done? He says to Belisande. Axel's spirit asked that she be the one to set his pyre alight this evening. I think perhaps we should wait until after that has been done. Oh. Fine, Kalyra says. She sits in the center of this stone circle. I begrudge every moment. What is it that she wishes to know, Master? Says Belisande. You may as well tell her, says Varys, and Kalyra explains the whole sorry story again. Once you have made your peace with them, we will tell you what you need to know. But since there is time yet, there's something I would like to know from you, Varys says. What? Says Kalyra. What did you promise to the Black Lady? I needed to get to my father. I needed to save him. I still need to save him. But that boar killed me. I spoke with the Black Lady, and she demanded that I bring the Rose of Light and Shadow to her from the shattered wastes beyond the Veiled Mountains. I'm going to ask the Oracle whether Varys knows anything about the Rose of Light and Shadow. I think there is only a small chance that that Varys knows about this, so he will know about something, maybe not a whole lot, but something about the Rose of Light and Shadow, if I roll a 91 or greater. 86. Pretty high up there, but he is not familiar with it. The Rose of Light and Shadow, he says. I do not like this. The Black Lady has strange agendas. However, you cannot in honor forswear your vow. And I think I'm going to go ahead and mark progress on Find a Kokari and learn about primordials, because
Kalyra has revealed her epic quest about the Rose of Light and Shadow to him, and it has not immediately led him to not want to do things for her. So that brings me up to 8 out of 10 on there.
"What is this place?" Kalyra says. "I saw stones like these, or a stone like these, once before."
"You did," said Varys. And once again Kalyra recounts the stone that she found on her path north from Palenham. "And you say it was very old?"
"Oh, yes," Kalyra says. "It was covered in lichen. And my mother told me that lichen grows very slowly, perhaps an inch every 100 years or so. But I saw patches that were 6 or 7 or maybe 8 or 9 inches across. It had not been touched in a very long time."
"Hmm. These stones are relics of our people. There must have been an elven settlement near your Palenham at some point in the distant past.
If so, we know nothing about it," says Kalyra. "I hadn't even heard that that stone existed until I came across it myself."
"Hmm. Go over to one of the stones and touch it," Varys says, and Belisant draws her breath in sharply. Kalyra looks over at Belisant wonderingly, but she stands and walks over and touches the stone.
"It's singing," she said.
"Yes.
Those are the songs of our ancestors. They root us, and they grant us wisdom. I wonder what you would have heard had you touched the stone by Palenham."
"I don't know," Kalyra says. "I did not touch it. I went on my way."
"Hmm.
In any case," Varys says, "I will tell you what you need to know once you have finished making your peace with the rest of the tribe. Go now. I must think." Belisant takes Kalyra back to the village where they wait for the evening. In the gathering dusk, the entire tribe makes their way to the burial grounds. There are 3 pyres set up, and atop them are the 3 men whom Kalyra slew.
"What happened to Ralith's body?" Kalyra says to Belisant.
"She is not being granted an honorable burial. She was a murderess."
"Oh."
Kalyra does not ask any further what is happened to Ralith's body. The elves gather around the pyres, and one at a time they step forward. Alina lights the pyre of her husband, Jaska, and the entire tribe calls out his name as the flames take hold in the kindling. Aoni takes a torch to the pyre of Ilmari, and once again the tribe calls out his name, Ilmari. The man and the woman whom Kalyra met earlier approach her and hand her a torch. Kalyra nods and walks forward.
"Go in peace," she says, and sets the torch to the kindling of Axel.
And as the flames roar up in front of her, the entire tribe calls out, "Axel." And I will go ahead and mark progress on making peace with her slain, because she has now completed everything that was asked of her there. I'm also going to mark progress on set things right for the Skarn. The entire tribe stands for a brief moment and watches the the pyres burn. Then they begin to file away. "Come," says Belisand. "Varys must stand and watch the pyres through the night. The rest of us should go. The close family may stay if they wish, but it is not our place here." And so, with the pyres burning behind her, a very sober Kalyra walks back towards the village of the Skarn, contemplating all that she has done. And I'm going to move to fulfill her vow to make peace with her slain. Strong hit on a double 3 versus 10 progress, so I get to mark experience. Just 1, because it was troublesome. With double 3s, do I want a twist? Yes, I do. When Kalyra gets back to her room, because clearly if Varys is going to be up all night tending those pyres, she is not going to be able to ask him until he's done with his task. When she gets back to her room, she discovers something waiting for her there. Set on the floor of the room lie the two halves of Roloth's mask. There is no indication as to who brought them, or why they're here. But Kalyra takes them and looks at them. As her fingers brush across the wooden surface, she can hear something very faint, like a whisper. She looks over her shoulder, but there is no one there. She sets them off at the side of the room and goes to bed. "Tomorrow," she thinks as she goes to sleep, "tomorrow I will finally find out what I need to know. Father, I'm coming." And that's where we're going to call session.